This episode is sponsored by Sanebox, where Inbox Zero is just one click away.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Markets up for the quarter, but down for the month. Consumer confidence is roaring higher, but spending's down. And our guest today, Tim Sykes, a pro who makes millions from trading penny stocks. All this and much more on episode number 503 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And welcome here to the Disciplined Investor Podcast. It is April 2017, episode number 503. I'm Andrew Horowitz, your host, and thanks for joining me. We have a few things to talk about today that are, I think, kind of interesting. Talk about the economy a bit, some of the things coming up, some of the things that just happened, and a bit of a quick down and dirty analysis of what's happening. And then we have our great guest coming up. But I thought we would start with a couple of little bitties, some things that have gone on in the last week. I'll mention that I did put an update on the marijuana stocks, what's going on, some performance numbers of the stocks that we actually track. And I put it up on the disciplinedinvestor.com. It's called an update on 420 stocks. So if you want to check that out, you can go over there and read that and see which ones that were actually kind of the ones that I have on my radar screen. You know, the ones that are kind of in my watch list to see what's going on, if there's any opportunity there. I mentioned on DH Unplugged, I like one that is not, I wouldn't call it actually a quote unquote pot stock, but it has some elements because part of the things they're doing are related to the pain relieving abilities of marijuana. And they're using it in some of their trials and some things called Cara Therapeutics, C-A-R-A. And I actually picked that for the game, I believe, a couple of weeks back. But that's the game we play on DH Unplugged each and every week, where we have some stock tips and some ideas, some things that may be very interesting to look at. Well, let's get into a little bit of a look back of what happened. We saw that the month of March, which was actually a down month for some of the indices. The NASDAQ actually was... was a bit higher, but the S&P and the Dow, I believe, were slightly negative for the period. One of the things that I noticed last week is that we saw the reports, the economic reports on consumer spending and savings and confidence. So here's what's interesting, is something we've been talking about here for a while, and it's a very interesting dynamic that's going on right now in terms of the optimism, what people are feeling about the current situation and their future situation, as well as how that relates or seemingly doesn't really relate to what's going on with how they're actually spending. You would think that when we're seeing that optimism, whether it's the Michigan number or the Conference Board's number, that comes in at 16-year highs on the number. We saw that the final number came in at 125.6 for March, which is about 10 points higher than it was in the past month, and the highest level since December 2000. So 16 years and 3 months ago. And what's really interesting is there was expectations for the index to come down a little bit. So what's interesting is that we're not seeing that actually translate into people saying, well, I feel a lot better about things. And not only do I feel better about things now and into the future, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. That's not what they're doing. They're seemingly talking a good game, but they're not actually doing anything about it. Because what we saw was that personal spending actually slowed down a little bit last period. The conference report, Department of Commerce report came out, And we saw that it was only a 0.1% gain for personal spending in February. 0.1%. And this is when personal incomes rose 0.4%, which was on the back of a 0.5% jump in January, if you remember that. But spending isn't happening. In other words, when people make more money and they don't spend more, what happens? Well, we have it going into savings. Oftentimes what you find is that people are putting more money into savings when they're not confident about what's going on around the world, in their own economics, in their own situation now and into the future, where they have a bit of concern about, well, I need to start saving these acorns, putting them, burying them down there so that we're going to have enough for the winter. They sock money away for the future because they're really not in the mood to spend it on now, on things for themselves at this point. Now, there could be many reasons why this is the case. One of the things may be simply that we've reached a point where the people that are making money right now, that are earning extra money, what they're doing is that they are actually saying, you know what, I really need to start saving for my future, something I couldn't do for a while. So therefore, I kind of am okay with the amount of things that I have right now in terms of my material possessions, my food, et cetera. All that stuff, I'm okay. And for a while, I was coming out of this malaise where I felt like I didn't have enough. And I feel comfortable enough now that I could put more into savings. It could be also there's a lot of optimism over the stock market that keeps on seemingly climbing no matter what goes on, no matter what headwinds are out there. And what they're saying is that, well, you know, maybe I should put my money there instead of actually trying to buy something for myself today. Whatever the case may be, we could make a lot of different scenarios up here into in explaining, or at least trying to explain, why there is this level of discrepancy between how I feel and my confidence as a consumer. Remember, it's consumer confidence. Confidence as a consumer and actually what I'm spending. I find it really kind of interesting, though, that some of these things, and it could be because of quantitative easing. It could be because of the change in politics of late in terms of we went from Democrat to Republican now and some of the fiscal spending plans that are on the board. Maybe it has just taken a lot of these economic measures and made them not as, I would say, easily interpretable. Interpreted. I'll get the word eventually. Not as easily interpreted. And it playing out a little bit differently because we have warped the sense of where interest rates are and where the potential is for taxes in the future. So maybe that's all playing out to a point that people are saying, you know, well, at this point I have good interest rate. It's very low. I can borrow money. And we have been seeing consumer credit move up. I'm seeing that maybe in the future, I'm going to have a better tax situation. So maybe confidence is really showing up there. And possibly they're just waiting for this all to come together before they actually start spending. I mean, again, there's a lot of different ways that we can look at this. But the numbers do tell an interesting story, not as much of what you would want to see as an economist to do any kind of reasonable projections, because you would likely, as an economist, expect to see spending higher with confidence higher. So again, this weird discrepancy is going on here. In terms of housing, we did see also last week that housing contract activity, or pending home sales, as they call it, increased about 5.5%. And this was good because there was a decline of about 2.5% plus in the previous month. And it could be because interest rates have, while they've gone up a little bit, they've really backed off. So in other words, what happened is when we were expecting the rate hike, people kind of said, you know what, I'm not going to do this. But when the rate hike came in, only a 0.25%, and there was a little bit more of a dovish commentary by Yellen, maybe there was some thought that, you know what, maybe I'll go and I'll kind of move in and to think about buying a home at this point, because rates are still reasonable. And we also saw, interestingly, the 20-city Case-Shiller Home Price Index for January showed a nice gain, 5.7% year over year. So that was good. In other words, we're still seeing that housing prices are in general, there's pockets of places that are problematic, like Miami on the high end, which we're seeing that the inventory is starting to grow substantially and prices for sales are coming down. New York City and a few other areas that are in the high priced, we're seeing that there's some longest selling times in the market, and also an offer price that is lower than the actual ask price by a wider margin than we've seen for some time. But again, nothing too dramatic there to really be concerned about. Now, coming up this week, Monday, we have the ISM release for the manufacturing. We have a report on February activity in the factory area. The factory orders report is coming out on Tuesday. And Wednesday, we'll see the March Federal Reserve policy meeting report, the minutes. The latest of the non-manufacturing or the service sector ISM for PMI. We're going to see, of course, this week, don't forget about this, the ADP report, the payrolls report on Wednesday. See some earnings from Bed Bath & Beyond, Monsanto, Rite Aid, Walgreens. And then we're going to see on Thursday initial claims, which is going to lead us right into Friday, where we'll see the Department of Labor issuing a March employment report, which expectations are somewhere around the same number, about 4.7% unemployment rate, and about 175,000 of new jobs added. One of the things we're going to see on Thursday, by the way, just to back it up a second, is earnings from CarMax. Now, this is going to be an interesting barometer because we're going to see how problematic it really is for used car prices. One of the recent themes we've seen that has been talked about quite often is the fact that there is a glut of used cars on the market, and we possibly are going to see a significant cut in sales and revenues for some of these companies. So we'll have to take a look at that and what happens there. Let me switch it up for a second. And before we get to our guest, Tim Sykes, I got to ask you something. How's your email inbox doing? You know, over the last couple of months, we've had a great sponsor, Sanebox. And we're getting some interesting commentary from people who have been listening and been using it and saying how great it is because, you know, they had just, I don't know, dozens or hundreds of emails in their inbox and it just couldn't deal with it because if you know, anything, we do know that spam is a major problem when it comes to dealing with communications these days. And I had the problem and there was too many emails, too much stuff going on. But here's the thing that I did find out. I didn't realize that there was actually a couple of different ways to do this in terms of working with a company like Sanebox. And I learned this whole concept of reaching inbox zero and taking back my email sanity. I'll be honest with you. It was kind of a little bit crazy there for a while. I have a lot of different email addresses and a lot of different ones that I get information in on. Some are less spam versus others. But my Gmail account, my personal Gmail account is just what got out of control. So this Sanebox, which is what I want to tell you about, I highly recommend it. It sorts through your email and moves all of your, basically the trivial, the stuff that you don't need into a different folder so that only the messages in your inbox are the ones that you actually want to see. So, of course, it removes all the junk so you can focus on the things that are in there. But one of the things they have that's really great is this feature called the black hole. What you do is you move an email very simply into that folder and then you never have to hear from that sender again. It's wonderful. We all could use a lot more organization in our email life. And because of that, we worked out a great deal for my listeners. What you have to do is go to sanebox.com/TDI. And they'll throw in an extra $20 credit on top of the 2-week free trial. You don't have to enter a credit card information or anything like that unless you eventually decide to buy it. So there's really nothing to lose. Pretty cool. I want you to check it out today and let me know how much you loved it and how much you love that whole black hole feature. And getting towards what I call inbox zero. Again, that's sanebox.com, sanebox.com/TDI to get this wonderful free trial. And I'm going to tell you something, you're going to love it. And let me know about it, how much you love it. Send me an email. And our guest today is someone who hasn't been with us for some time. As a matter of fact, a number of years, but a good friend of mine, Tim Sykes. He writes a newsletter. He has some various services, very charitable, travels the world, a penny stock picker. He's amazing story, and actually we're going to go through it. So, Tim, how are you?
Awesome, man. Thanks for having me again.
So I wanted to, for those of our listeners who have not heard you in some time, and maybe just, you know, pick you up on social media and all that, but let's kind of go back to the beginnings. Now, when I first met you, it was a number of years ago, probably what, 20 years ago?
A number of pounds ago, yes.
and one of your claims to fame was, hey, listen, I took this money that I had from my bar mitzvah and I turned it into, you know, all sorts of money. Kind of take us through that story, the, you know, the boom to the bust and then back to the boom very quickly.
Sure. So, you know, I was a tennis player in high school. My parents gave me control of my bar mitzvah money when I was injured. So I had really nothing to do senior year of high school, freshman year of college. This was 1999. And they thought that I would lose it all. They thought that it would be a good lesson. And instead, I took the 12 grand and turned it into a little over 100 grand my first year, which was, you know, big money for a middle class kid from Connecticut like me. And then, you know, freshman year in college, this was year 2000 during the bubble. And I was just buying, you know, simple breakouts. I didn't even know short selling back then. And I took the 100,000 and turned it into nearly 800,000. So I was hooked. And by the time I graduated college, it was nearly 2 million. I started a hedge fund. I was the number one ranked hedge fund for 3 years, mainly focused on short selling. That's primarily what I do when I trade these low price stocks. I like to bet against them. You can actually make money when pump and dumps crash, you know, like Wolf of Wall Street. I'm like the opposite of the Wolf of Wall Street. I like to wait for those and, you know, wait for them to fail or wait for the promotions to end and then bet against it. But as a hedge fund manager, you know, it's not really a scalable strategy. So I had a few million dollars under management, but I got greedy and I invested roughly a third of my fund into my best friend's dad's print at home ticketing company. They basically invented print at home ticketing. So I was all excited about this technology. It was good to be, you know, an investor and not so cynical anymore. And the company went bust. The technology worked. And actually, after bankruptcy, they later got bought for the equivalent of $30 million. So I would have made a few million dollars. But I was off on my timing. I didn't understand investing versus trading. And I lost roughly a third of my fund and all of my credibility. But at that time, I was on the TV show Wall Street Warriors. And thanks to the, you know, rules regarding performance, no one even knew that I had lost a third of my money. So Wall Street Warriors became a hit and everybody wanted to learn. And I was like, hey, you know, my hedge fund isn't really doing much. You know, why don't I try teaching? So there was a whole article on Reuters said, failed hedge fund manager tries again on the internet. And I knew that my losses, you know, were due to investing. I had gotten away from what had made me a lot of money, but no one else knew that. They just see, oh, you know, cocky kid on TV makes a lot of money. He let fame get to his head. And in reality, I just was not disciplined. I didn't know the rules that I know now. And so I got back to trading and teaching, and I was very fortunate because my life is like Forrest Gump. Good things seem to happen and I don't plan on them. And there was a website called Covestor, which verifies account performance. And when I was looking for credibility again, you know, I signed up and they verified my performance. And as I was teaching and showing every trade, I went back to my $12,000 initial roots and I was like, I got to do this again. And Covestor verified it. I became the number one ranked trader at a 60,000 plus. And I turned the 12,000 into roughly a quarter of a million, not quite, you know, millions, because I was trading conservatively and teaching at the same time. But I was the number one ranked trader over 3 years. And then I got focused on teaching. Now I have a few millionaire students and now I have students in 90 plus countries. I keep growing my account. I usually go back to 12,000 to begin the year every year. And I just show how to grow a small account. And now, you know, several of my top students have been featured on CNN and the Steve Harvey Show, and I've been featured on Larry King. And I just try and teach kind of a different strategy with penny stocks and how to grow a small account that's not necessarily a scalable strategy to like the hedge fund world of hundreds of millions or billions of dollars, but it's a good strategy for, you know, regular folks.
So, you know, and you know, it's difficult because, you know, when you're in the side of, especially with short selling and short selling of smaller stocks. Now, you really focus on what? The stocks under what level? Under what price?
Usually under $5 a share, but lately some of these penny stocks have been going up to like $10. Like right as we're filming this, I'm watching HTGM, which has gone from $2 to $12 in less than a week. Right. It's now at $9 and it's fading. So all I'm doing is looking for kind of like this pump and dump kind of pattern where you have these parabolic moves in these stocks that don't deserve it.
Well, let's go back to that because I think that's important. You know, and the one example that I think a lot of people know about, we've talked about on this show and a couple other shows I've done, is dry ships, right? Dry ships went from, I don't know, a dollar to like 110.
120 pre-market when it got halted by the SEC in a week and a half.
Right. And then it just started collapsing and it's back down to now and then it's splitting. I don't even know what the price is now. Maybe it's 30 cents.
Split so many times, but basically 1 to 100 back down to 1 all inside of a few weeks. And that is an extreme example of what I do. But I know a lot of short sellers who were, you know, crushed betting against it at, you know, 30, 40, 50, thinking it could go no higher. And then they're covering at 60, 70, 80. So there are risks. And you don't know how high it can go. And especially lately in this crazy bull market, you know, you have to be very careful. So I've actually gone a little long. I was actually going long, you know, these kinds of plays lately because it's better risk reward. So I go long and I go short, but I'm focused purely on this kind of phenomenon that's caused by, you know, short squeezes and stop losses. And it's not necessarily about the fundamentals or the value of the actual company. You know, the stock is just a trading vehicle that people use, and we play the volatility.
Yeah, I mean, because there is you're not looking at fundamentals when it comes to dry ships, which is basically a bankrupt firm.
There are fundamentals. And the reason why it went down so much is because they've been diluting the heck out of shareholders. So, you know, when the stock rises, they just sell shares to the naive public and they cash in. So that's why these companies will always do it. That's why this game will always play. And, you know, you'll have small company after small company issuing hyped up press releases and you know, some of them are legal, some of them is gray area. I don't care. All I care about is that I look for this volatility and it is there.
So let's talk about how you set up a winning trade. Because one of the things is, if nothing else, is how to find the actual name you're going to trade. Right? I mean, that's I would say 99% of the process to at least get to, okay, am I going to trade this or not? But how do you find that? What's the daily mechanism that you use?
Yeah. So every single day for roughly the past 20 years, I look at the biggest percent winners in the small cap market, you know, stocks under $5, under $10 a share, stocks that move 20, 30, 50, 100%. I used to use Yahoo Finance. It was a very good website until they changed it and they made it terrible. Now I use a software called StocksToTrade.com, which has basically programmed my strategy and my scans. So I'm just looking for the biggest percent winners. And with these penny stocks, again, because there's literally no fundamentals, none of them deserve to go up this much. So it's just a question of how high will it go and when will it end? And then I'm looking at, you know, different catalysts and different news and different sectors. You know, shipping because of DRYS was really hot for a while. So it wasn't just DRYS. I mean, there were dozens of shipping companies that spiked 100, 200, 300% in a few days. So a lot of the time, I don't necessarily play the biggest percent winner itself. I'm looking for sympathy plays in the same sector or similar kinds of plays.
And then what do you do? So now you're looking at, okay, this thing is, it's, you know, we see a pre-market, maybe nothing's happened for a few days. It's up, 25, 30% at that point. And you have to make a determination of, am I going to go long? Am I going to go short? And do you look at, all right, what was the driver behind this? Does that matter?
Yeah, exactly. So the catalyst matters. You know, DRYS, there wasn't really any great news, but there was great volume. So I'm looking to buy the high of the day break. On the first big day, you know, if it's up 25 or 30%, or this goes pretty much for any penny stock, it doesn't necessarily have to have great news. But if the volume is huge and, you know, it has a small float, you know, you have to look at how many shares are available to trade. So it's basic supply and demand. If there's a very small float like DRYS and there's huge volume, some people are going to hold on to their shares. And guess what? When there's great demand and little supply, the price has to go up. This is economics 101. So I'm looking for the high of the day breakout. A lot of traders simply just use the high of the day breakout for their scans. So when something is breaking out, it doesn't matter what the news is. If the volume is huge, momentum traders will jump on it. And for me, I want to be there before the momentum traders are on it. And that way I can sell into the momentum traders when they catch it and they push it up even more.
Right, exactly. All right. So now, what stocks won't you trade?
I mean, I don't like illiquid stocks. So a lot of these penny stocks have great stories and great products, no different than the one that, you know, killed my hedge fund. You know, I personally lost $500,000. My hedge fund lost $1 million. So that was a really tough pill to swallow. But at the same time, it really helped me understand that it doesn't matter how good the technology is. If the stock that you're trading is very illiquid, it's tough to get in or out of big positions, it's not worth it. So I stick to stocks that trade, you know, a few million shares a day. Sometimes I venture into like a few hundred thousand shares, but if it's only trading like 1,000 or 5,000 or 50,000, I don't care how great the technology is, it's not worth it.
Right. I mean, because then you won't be able to get out and you'll be the one getting slammed.
Yeah. And also
direction.
Yeah. And also there's a crazy spread. You know, part of my success is, you know, cutting losses quickly. Ever since my big loss, I've been very conservative. Oh, HTGM, as we're filming this, by the way, is cracking. Watch HTGM. Everybody listening, look at like a 10-day chart. I don't care when this gets posted. You will see in early 2017, at the end of March 2017, HTGM from 2 up to 12. Now it's coming down to the 940s. I have several top students who are short. So for me, it's just looking for this volatility and looking for this liquidity. I'm a trader, but with these low-priced stocks, there's so much volatility. It's actually fascinating to play it long and short. You can make 10, 20, 30% in a few hours or a few days. I don't hold ever. I don't believe in any of these companies. I don't try to make, you know, 200, 300% like most people who trade penny stocks do. I take the meat of the move.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned about going short some of these smaller stocks. You know, so I've gotten a lot of emails and questions from people about, wait, my broker doesn't have shares available. I've tried for this and even some bigger name stocks. How do you make sure to get these short shares, these borrows on many of these small, very illiquid, very volatile positions?
Yeah, so that's one of the big problems. That's frankly why I'm a teacher and not a hedge fund manager, because you can't take, you know, a million or 2 million share short position on any of these. You can't put big money on it, but you can get, you know, a few thousand shares, sometimes 10, 20, 50,000 shares if you have the right broker. I use Interactive Brokers and E-Trade. I used to try to use all kinds of different brokers with specialized short selling services, but it's very expensive to find borrows on a lot of these stocks. You have to pay daily fees and interest. So for me, I just stick with the big brokers these days. And if I can't find shares to short, I can't find it. I have a whole music video called No Borrow, No Cry.
I mean, there is a problem. I mean, we use Interactive Brokers also, and they're pretty good on the borrow. But you look at some of the big boys, and you know, a lot of times you have to call in advance, and you have to. I mean, anytime I have to call in advance for a short, it's like, no, not doing it. Because then they have to do a find, and you may have to borrow cost and all that. Let's talk about chat rooms. Sure. I saw a couple of posts that you made, and let's talk about for a moment. I know you have some chat rooms you like and all that, but let's talk about the concept of chat rooms for investors for a second, because there's a lot of really crappy chat rooms out there. What do they do? Explain what the crappy ones and the problematic ones do.
Sure. A lot of crappy ones and a lot of people using chat rooms in the wrong way. You know, you have to really think about, why do 90% of traders lose? No one really talks about this stats, but academic study after study has proven that most traders lose. And it's because they're taking the wrong approach. They use chat rooms as an idea source, you know, like, oh, this stock is moving. And then, you know, one person in the chat room buys it, and then everyone else is like, follow the leader. And I specifically tell my people, never, ever, ever follow any alerts, any picks from anybody else. I share my picks in real time, specifically so people can learn. And I type out like a whole explanation of like why I'm getting in, what's my risk, what's my goal. And by the time people even get it, a lot of the time the move has already been made. And that's good, because I don't want people following my plays. A lot of other chat rooms, they just type in a ticker and they say buy this ticker or, you know, short this ticker, and the whole chat room follows suit. And that is a terrible, terrible way to try to make money, because, you know, the person who's doing, you know, first, they're going to get in. They're going to get in first and then they're going to get out first. This is accounting 101, FIFO and LIFO. So you don't want to be the last one in. Also, you want to be self-sufficient. All of my millionaire students, they don't care at all about my picks or my alerts. They're trading their own patterns. You need to learn what works best for you. We're all different. We have different account sizes, different personalities, different strengths and weaknesses. So with trading, it's not just about, you know, buying or selling good companies or bad companies. Trading is kind of like an art. It's not an exact science. So you have to get used to the patterns. You have to get used to what works for you and your schedule. You know, I have some students who are part-time, so they're only trading at the market open or at the market close, and they're working or they're in school or they're, you know, taking care of their pets during the rest of the day, whatever have you. But for me, chat rooms are useful in the sense like you see what stocks are in play, but I never, ever want to follow any picks. And I never want to invest or risk my hard-earned money with a play that I haven't thoroughly researched. I don't want to just say, oh, here's a ticker, let me buy it. And it's like a casino mentality, and you're inevitably going to have worse results and you're not going to learn much.
Well, the other problem also is, which you alluded to, is you don't know what anybody else's motivation is involved in this. If it is just, hey guys, I'm part of the chat room team and let's go search out the best stocks and looking for shorts, long positions, or whatever else it may be, or even investable opportunities for a longer period of time. You don't know if someone is just doing it to do a pump and dump, and maybe it's just in their own best interest to try to spread the word out. There's a lot of sites out there. There's a lot of websites and I always wonder about Motley Fool and a few of these other ones that always seem to have these grandiose, headlines that they use, the best stock to buy with an 80% return opportunity, whatever. I always wonder, obviously somebody's got some stake in this deal. And the same thing, and even more so with chat rooms, right? That you may find that there's a lot of players in there that they're in multiple chat rooms, and who knows if they have a team of people working the chat rooms just to try to get that deal going in their favor.
Yeah, no, you can't trust anybody. And, I know from these websites with their grandiose expectations, Motley Fool had a big hit about two decades ago with iOmega. And they've been milking that. They've been milking that business model ever since because iOmega, during the dot-com boom was a big winner. They picked it. And now they said, wait, wow, if we pick a big winner or we claim to pick a big winner, then we get more subscribers. So a lot of these chat rooms and newsletters just want the most number of subscribers because they're getting paid by the subscribers. They want the most number of people in their stock because they're already invested in the stock and they want others to buy after them. For me, I don't want the most. A lot of people say, Tim, you could be nicer and have many more students. I'm already overwhelmed. I don't want any more students. If I turn people off with my attitude, good. Let them get away. Because I really can't deal with anymore. I'm already overwhelmed. I want quality over quantity. But Motley Fool or, a lot of these chat rooms where they're not actually teaching, they're not actually, giving any real strategy. They just want the most number of paid subscribers. They want the most number of people in their stock. And that's their business model. So you have to be very careful who you learn from and what information you trust. The cool thing with these chat rooms is, again, since I'm a short seller and I like to go contrarian to the trend, when these chat rooms, especially when three or four of them get together and they all buy the same stock at the same time, it's a chat room pump. And some of these stocks can spike, 20, 30, 40%, a lot of these low float stocks. And when the chat rooms stop pumping it, guess what? They fall from the sky. It's like a jet plane without any fuel. So they make for great shorts. So people will hate on chat rooms. For me, if I know the rules and if I have the right mentality, I can use it to, basically bet against the crowd.
Now, you mentioned something that, sometimes people don't like you and, fine, that's okay with you and all. And I know you and I know you in a setting away from your computer and away from the TV cameras and all that. And you're a teddy bear.
Boo, boring.
You're next. A teddy bear.
Next, boo. Don't ruin it, Andrew.
Oh, sorry. You're ruining it. Sorry. Yeah.
I want people to be pissed off with me because I don't want them following my picks. I don't want to get any bigger. I'm already overwhelmed and you can't tell them the truth because then more people are going to come to me and I'm going to be very annoyed.
All right. So You know what? All right. Let me just restate that.
I'm not a teddy bear. Andrew's a liar.
Investor. Tim Sykes is a dick. Let's just say that. Okay. That's all.
I believe I've earned that over many years of hard work. My accomplishments away from me.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay. You're right. You could be a little rough around the edges. Let's just say that. But now let's...
No, but I'm seriously, I'm not looking to make friends. There's a lot of people who are like, oh, the stock market's so easy. This is so great. And I'm like, this is a freaking battlefield here. You know, if I tell you that this is a land of leprechauns and rainbows and unicorns and you come in, you are going to get crushed. If the dancing baby on E-Trade commercials were an actual baby who was actually like stock trading, the baby would be all bloodied. It would be massacred. It would be a terrible sight. It would not make any TV. That's what the stock market is. So I have to be a dick. I have to teach my people to be hard and never to follow alerts and never to, just let losses run. You have to cut losses quickly. So I'm kind of like a drill sergeant and I take my job very seriously.
So let's talk about that. That's a good point, though, that you talk about some absolute rules and some things that you have. There's a piece you wrote about the seven things that you need to be aware of before making a trade.
Yeah. Rule number one, first of all, let's talk about that. Cut losses quickly. It doesn't matter how many millions of dollars I've made or how hot I've been. I could be wrong on any trade. And if I can be wrong, you can be wrong. Warren Buffett can be wrong. It doesn't matter your track record. You have to be scared of the possibilities. And DRYS was a great example where the fundamentals did not support a run up from freaking $1 to $5, let alone $1 to $100. But sometimes that fundamentally worst company in the entire world can also become the best stock with a short squeeze. So you have to beware. And shorting is very dangerous because not only can you lose all your money, you can lose all your money and also owe your broker money. You can go into debt. And that happens when you're shorting a lot of these volatile stocks. So rule number one, cut losses quickly on longs and shorts. So I'm not right 100% of the time. My winning percentage is in the roughly 70% tile. But the good thing is, even when I'm wrong, my losses are smaller than my gains. And that inevitably helps me grow my account over time. You know, I haven't been trading that well in March. I kind of had a sloppy few weeks. I made many video lessons explaining my mistakes and what I was doing wrong. And then just last week, last Friday, I had a massive gain. I waited for this stock for this perfect pattern and I had patience and all my losses were wiped away from one big gain. That was only because I listened to rule number one on all my mistakes and I cut losses quickly. So it was easy to overcome. Mm-hmm. Too many people lose big. They're screwed up mentally. They're screwed up financially. And it's a very slippery slope. Once you start losing, you know, you start making revenge trades. You try and get your money back. You're not taking good trades. You're not in the right mindset. So I never want to fall down that slippery slope. And the key is cutting losses. Even if the stock comes back and you're like, oh, I could have been right. Why did I cut losses? It doesn't matter. You protected yourself. You never let a small mistake turn into a potentially big disaster.
Yep, that's good. That's great advice on any level of investing. I mean, seriously.
Yeah, it's too many people. I mean, not forget about just trading. Even if you're investing, you know, you watch this stock. Let's say you fall in love with a product or the company or the research or the pitch. And, you know, it's not going in your direction. You're down 20 or 30%. But now you're like, well, now it's a deal. So let me double up or triple up. And it's not like a freaking Black Friday sale at Sears. You know, the product when it drops 20 or 30% is a very different product as just like a sweater that you're buying. If you're buying a sweater and it's 30% off, it's the same sweater. If you're buying a stock that's 30% off, there's a reason why the stock dropped 30%. Mm-hmm. In my experience, when a stock drops 30, 40, 50%, there's something really wrong and it can drop even more.
Yeah, yeah. What are the pearls of wisdom from the seven items?
I mean, cutting losses is number one.
Well,
actually,
let me throw something at you. What about when do you take a gain?
Ah, for me, that's a bad question because I usually play too safely. I take 10, 20, 30% profits all the time because, frankly, I'm like a little bitch when I'm trading. I don't go for big gains. And that goes to planning. Like, never enter a trade or investment without a plan. And then you have to stick to that plan. But when I have a plan, and because my rule number one is cut losses quickly, which means, you know, cutting losses quickly with these fast moving stocks, I don't like losses of more than 5%. So I cut it very, very quickly. But if my risk is losing potentially 5% and my goal is to make, let's say, 20%, then my risk reward is 4-1. And that's a good plan. So I always try and have a specific reward, a specific mentality in mind. But oftentimes I get out before my original goals even reached just because, you know, sometimes the stock doesn't go exactly as planned. Sometimes it looks like it's not, you know, going to make it to my initial goal. So I cut quicker. And that's not necessarily a good thing. You know, a lot of my students are doing better than me because they're like, hey, Tim, this is a good pattern. Like, have some balls. But I trade like a castrated choir boy. I trade like a castrated choir boy.
Well, let me ask you this, though. But what about going back to the well?
Sorry, Andrew. I can't be any more aggressive because my balls have been cut off.
What about going back to the well? So you got a stock that you got hit by your 5%. You're like, I'm out. What about going back?
So when I lose, the way that I look at it is my mentality is all messed up. Now I can't be unbiased. I can't really think logically about this stock because now if I get back in, you know, maybe my original thesis is true, or maybe I'm just getting back in like I'm in a revenge trade. I kind of think of it as like a breakup. Like, you know, you're on the rebound. You're not in the right mindset for, you know, a big relationship again. You've just been burned, whether, you know, you broke off the relationship or you got dumped. And the same kind of holds true with trading. So oftentimes I just miss many, many trades and I've still made millions of dollars. This is the cool thing. You don't ever have to be afraid of missing out. A lot of people have FOMO, fear of missing out on a play. and they want to capture it all. For me, I've learned what my strengths and weaknesses are. I'm a very, very vengeful type person. So I cannot simply just get in and out of a stock. I hate the stock. I start thinking about that, and then I'm not thinking clearly. So I have to avoid. I have to put myself in timeout.
Mm. So what particular, if any, technical analysis that you use? Do you use anything?
Yeah, you know, I'm very simple though. I know there's a lot of fancy technical analytics out there. I just use basic past support and resistance, you know. So like when I'm buying a stock, I want it to break out on an intraday basis, ideally on a weekly basis and a multi-month basis. The more breakouts over different time frames, the better. When I'm shorting, same kind of thing. I'm looking for an intraday breakdown, a multi-week, a multi-month breakdown, and you can see these certain levels if you look at multiple timeframes, and I like it when, you know, they all kind of collide because it creates like this whole kind of like wave of selling, especially when you're short selling, when it takes out a key support level and then you have stop losses. A lot of people in penny stocks think that they're safe when they use stop losses. Like, oh, the stock has gone from 1 to 4, so let me just protect myself. And if it drops down to 3, I'm out. But you put the stop loss at 3, and by the time you actually get executed, it's at 250 because everyone else is putting their stop loss at 3 too. So as a short seller, I really like it when it takes out those support levels because you have all these automated sell orders that are trying to sell because most people who trade penny stocks are idiots.
You know, the thing that's interesting about that is that one of the things I've always told people is if you're going to use a sell stop on any situation, never use a round number.
But they're not going to do that, Andrew. People are lazy, okay? You're taking advantage of lazy people.
I understand.
If you short sell because they don't listen. They're not going to put their shorts. They're not going to put their stops at like 305 or 307 or 309 like someone who's meticulous. They're just lazy and they just say, oh, I like round numbers. I don't want to have to think about my gains and, you know, tough. Like if I got in at 2, I want to get out at 3. I don't want to get out at 303. That's going to be annoying math.
Yeah, well, that's a problem because we know that, and this is where you use it as an advantage.
Don't tell people this. I want more lazy people.
All right. Well, we're trying to help them, though. Come on.
Everything. What's wrong with you?
I'm sorry. Sorry I'm not helping out your bankroll.
It's okay. You're a fellow member of the tribe. You're forgiven.
Exactly. All right. So let's, one of the things, even though we're not going to talk about all the wonderful things that you do, tell me about your... You know, you have various subscription services, et cetera. I mean, how does that work? What do you do with that? How do people follow you?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you go to timothysykes.com/plans, we have different levels, whether you just want chat room access and you can see 1,000 degenerate traders and, you know, their casino-like mentality, or if you want video lessons, I have 4,500 plus video lessons talking about different patterns and different trades. And then I also give live trading webinars. So you choose your level of dedication. There's a lot of people who are just like, yeah, Tim, I don't like a link to a video lesson just to force the degenerates to learn. So I'm always trying to get people to, you know, learn more and plan more and study the past. I'm basically like a glorified history teacher at this point. And I think that by studying the past, past trends, past sectors, past patterns, you get better prepared. Even though most people just don't care and they're just like, oh, I don't care about the past. Just tell me what's hot right now. If you study the past, you're better prepared for the future. And that's my whole mission.
All right, good stuff. Timothy Sykes, you can find information about all the things that he talks about and how much of a jerk he really is in real life over at timothysykes.com. Where else can they find you?
Also, if you go to howtomakemillions.com, this is my good deed in life where I made this 35-hour guide called How to Make Millions, and it talks about everything that I've learned in the markets, and it all goes to charity. And now this one guide – because it's, you know, my best reviewed guide and my most popular, and it all goes to charity. We've now raised over $2 million for the Timothy Sykes Foundation, all through howtomakemillions.com. So wow. I'm kind of proud of that.
Wow, that's awesome. You can also hear his original book, what was it now? Don't tell me. American Hedge Fund. An American Hedge Fund on audiobooks and also in regular books. You can find that over on Audible and Amazon and a variety of other places. I encourage.
Yes, you helped me make the audiobook. Oh, yeah.
That's right.
I can't thank you enough.
That's right. That's right. I forgot about that.
You know, I have students now in 90 plus countries, and a lot of them, you know, audiobooks are still hot in a lot of these places. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is awesome. Well,
we found a guy with like a silky smooth voice, and I sometimes listen to him like saying my words, and it just lulls me to sleep. It's very nice.
You can also track his travels, and I know that you had been on Below Deck before, and really, if you want to see exactly the depth of of his
depravity,
and obnoxiousness. So let me just say that you can find him on, go look up Tim Sykes on Below Deck. He's been, he had a week on a beautiful yacht there.
And although you also have to understand that I made $70,000 on this yacht that had crap Wi-Fi, and I was very happy because we got the whole trade on camera and they didn't use any clips of it. So you see me very happy because I thought that I was going to have like the absolute best TV clip ever, and they didn't use any of it. And then you just see me ridiculously happy and you're like, God, what's wrong with this guy? So it's reality TV is not always reality. Okay. Just remember that when you watch it.
Oh, but I think we definitely know that.
No, all right. Well, people don't know it. They think like the Real Housewives, you know, it's real. It's all edited. Listen, BS.
I remember being in Vegas one time. I'm walking down the strip, the old strip, and there's a whole bunch of trucks there and lights and things going on. I walk over and I said, hey, what are you guys doing? We're doing a reality show. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And then I hear the director say, all right, let's take that again. I'm thinking, wait a minute. What do you mean take that again? It's a reality show.
I kicked over a fan in Wall Street Warriors. And, you know, a lot of people remember this clip. And I filmed that maybe 17 times because I didn't get the right kick. But I'll tell you, fans from Home Depot were solid. Like, that fan did not break. They kept trying to get me to break it. So that's like reality TV, you know, for you. So you can't necessarily believe it. But at least, you know, because of the trade, several of my top students and I got a free yacht trip. So there's good karma in being real, even if you look like a douche.
I hear you. All right. Well, thanks. And we'll look forward to you being, you know, the same guy that you are. I'm glad you haven't changed one bit. But say hi to mom for me.
Shalom, my brother. Thank you for having me.
All right. See you soon. That was, if not anything, interesting and exciting. Tim always brings a sense of excitement to the show. Again, I haven't had him on for years, but I'm glad I had the opportunity to bring him on once again and showcase some of the things that he's doing, because some of the things he's doing are very interesting. You know, I mean, he definitely can help you in terms of understanding more about how to actually trade on the short side and how to make some money in penny stocks. Of course, you know, listen, let's be honest. It's a very aggressive game. There's opportunity to make a lot very quickly, but also lose a lot very quickly. And you better have a really good sense of what your parameters are, what the rules are, and what you're going to do if things don't go in the direction that you expect them to. And you have to kind of pull emotions out of it. I mean, this is one of the areas that you really need to put emotions on the sideline. You start getting emotional about this and getting a little bit crazy and anxious, it ain't going to work. I got to tell you something. You're going to have big problems when it comes to your portfolio if you're going to be looking at this in a very emotional manner, because these things don't just move up a penny or two at a time unless they're like a 4 cent stock. Yes. I mean, but we're talking about, you know, moves that could be 100%, 200% in a day or down 50% in a matter of minutes. Halts are very common with this too. So you better understand really what's going on and how these things are working before you dive into them. And like I said, I encourage you to check out some of the things that Tim's talking about. Learn a lot more about it before you really put some significant amount of funds to work. So just a little bit of a, not a disclaimer, but a warning more so when it comes to this this situation here. So I mentioned also, we put the marijuana stocks on thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I also want to mention that we are now, at the moment, we are at the point that we've collected enough people that will run the beta test on Investology, which is our advisor-crafted, technology-enhanced portfolio management. It's kind of blends some of the best things that you get with, dare I say, robo-advising, the technology aspect of it, but also some of the best things of working with an advisor. You know, sometimes they call it these hybrid models, but I like to call it more of a true investment model, but also having the ability to have control of it yourself as well. And, you know, we use ETFs, we use institutional and other mutual funds in active areas that are important to be active in. This whole idea of ETFs for everybody is nonsense, by the way. There is some room in a portfolio in certain areas, in certain sectors, asset classes that are appropriate for mutual funds, actively traded, actively managed mutual funds. So don't let this whole theme and meme and narrative that they're talking about, that ETF's the only play, you know, spoil your good opportunities that are out there. But anyway, we'll have more information. If you want more information about investology, then you can go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There's a form there to fill out. I will also mention that when we have the full release, we will send it out to everybody. For those of you that are beta testing, just be patient. We're just in the process of gathering. We have all your names, gathering all the information together and just finishing up a few things on the back end. And we will send you an email shortly with some of the instructions and some things that we're asking you to do in terms of giving us feedback, as well as setting up your accounts and making that all happen. So just be patient. It's all coming. Other than that, I want to wish you a very happy April. And I think that it's going to be an interesting one at that, because volatility usually oftentimes picks up in April. It's one of those months. We'll see how that plays out. Until then, I'll see you next week with some great guests coming up, by the way. Thanks a lot. Have a great one.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.